You're with SBS Radio.
Dear friends and listeners, my name is Avneet and joining us on the phone line from Perth, Western Australia is disability advocate Karan Nagrani. Karan, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Karan started to lose his vision at a young age to retinitis pigmentosa, a rare degenerative genetic condition, but he's unstoppable. He uses Instagram to raise awareness about his condition and often shows through videos and his quirky sense of humor what it's like living with RP on a daily basis. Karan was also recently nominated for the 2022 Blind Australian Award that celebrates the exceptional contribution of a blind Australian who, by example, inspires others to excellence and by action improves the community life. Karan, congratulations on the nomination. So how did you feel about it when you heard that you've been nominated for the award?
Well, first of all, thank you. What started off as a simple journey, obviously when you know you're going blind, you know, it's not always a bed of roses. It's, you know, you, as much as you try and be like, I'll be okay, you do go through that feeling of what am I going to do. And I sort of hit this spot where I had to give up my career because my eyesight had gotten so bad. And I went to a couple of months where I was feeling quite low and quite sad. And then I was like, you know what, let me try and change this attitude. Let me try and change my mindset. And it started off like that. And I just genuinely started to feel so good about what I was doing. And I was just creating content because RP is quite a rare condition. So to give you an idea, so one in 4,000 people across the world live with RP. And to put it in perspective, one in 11 people live with diabetes. So that'll show you how rare this is. And I just wanted to start raising awareness because almost everyone I met had not heard of this condition. I had to explain everything from start. So it got a little repetitive and it's quite exhausting having to repeat yourself. So I just started to do this as a hobby slash let's see if I can make a change. And I was getting a lot of positive comments. And when I was nominated by a disability organization called Visibility in Western Australia. And when I received the nomination, I'm not going to lie, I'm not an emotional person like that, but I actually had tears rolling down my face because what to me seemed like a, you know, a fun, casual, relaxed way of raising awareness was validated in a way that just changed my perspective. It made me feel like what I'm doing is actually making a difference. And I never thought I needed the validation, and I'm not saying I was seeking the validation, but when it happened, it was just such an emotional moment for me. It was just mind-blowing.
I can imagine. It can be overwhelming at times. So Karan, tell us something about your childhood, your family background, and how and when you were diagnosed with RP.
Sure. So my mum has retinitis pigmentosa. So as a kid, in Indian culture, we don't really like to talk about disabilities. It's just something that you talk about behind closed doors because it's don't tell anyone, what will people say? That's the mindset. So I grew up knowing my mum had a condition. I knew what the condition was, but we didn't talk about it too much. And when my mum and dad would leave the house, I would see my mum holding onto my dad's arm and everything. So it just seemed very normal. All I knew was that my mum has a condition. She doesn't see too well. So whenever there were parent-teacher meetings, I would hold my mum's arm or my sister would hold my mum's arm. So I grew up seeing retinitis pigmentosa in a way that was quite sheltered. It was quite, it was like there, but we didn't talk about it. So at the age of 11, I would have been playing. It didn't happen suddenly. Obviously, it's a slightly gradual process, but I would play sports after school. So I would be playing badminton or cricket. And I started to notice that I'm not following the shuttlecock as well. You know, like we're playing cricket. And if I was the field or the ball was right in front of me and I wouldn't see it. And my friends were like, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. And I'm like, pick what up? I can't see it. And then they started laughing at me. And, you know, initially I brushed it off. And then it reached a stage where I'm like, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I not able to see the ball? So I went home and I still remember that moment when I told my mum and dad what had happened. And I was quite upset. I was like, you know, they're teasing me. They're making fun of me because I'm not good. And I remember that jaws hitting the floor because it is a genetic condition. And that's when the penny dropped that maybe he's got it as well. So they took me to an ophthalmologist. He dilated my pupils, and instantly he was like, yep, he has retinitis pigmentosa. So that is how we found out. And I guess, like I said, for the growing up, there was a lot of don't tell anyone, you know, try and hide it, and you don't need to let people know. So I grew up with the mindset that this is something I need to hide. And my parents came from a good place. You know, they thought they were helping me out by telling me to not tell anyone about my condition to save me from complicated conversations or anything like that. So, yeah, that's my upbringing in a nutshell. And then I ended up moving to Malaysia at the age of 18. Mm-hmm. And even there, I didn't have the safety blanket of my family. I didn't have the comfort that you have in an Indian home of having staff and having family take care of everything. And that's when the struggle started to get a little bit more real, because I was a typical teenager, international university. We were partying, we were going out. And I was really struggling in these clubs, you know, because I couldn't see as well. And back then, at least, clubs had to, like, the dimmer they were, the better they were, because they had that UV lighting, you know, where the light was so dim, so everything glows. And I would really struggle, and I would come up with excuses to leave early. I would pretend that I'm getting drunk, so I need to go to bed. And then I moved to Australia when I just about turned 19. I think I turned 19 when I came to Australia. And same thing, it started to get worse. And I didn't want to talk about it to my family because it upsets my mom, you know, because she feels bad that I have to go through what she went through. And I didn't want to put her through that, so I would not talk about it. So, yeah, where my family's concerned, it took a lot of time for me to... and it's not that it's not like they ever made me feel like I can't talk about it. I just felt like I didn't want to talk about it because I didn't want to upset them, because my mum, being a typical mum, she would have felt guilty. You know, he's got this because of me, and I didn't want to put it through that.
Yeah. So if I had to ask you, what really is RP and what challenges do you have to face as a result of this condition?
Sure. So retinitis pigmentosa is, as you mentioned, a degenerative genetic eye condition. It's something that you're born with. Basically, to explain it in a nutshell, so the retina at the back of the eye is what helps you see what you're seeing. So the eye has a retina, which they have photosensitive cells. So the retina is like a camera. So to take a photo, and then it sort of translates what you've seen to the brain through the optic nerve. So that's how your brain looks at something, and it's like, yep, this is the TV, this is the person, this is the chair. Now, retinas have these cells, without getting into too much detail, they've got these cells called rods and cones, and they're basically photoreceptor cells. They start to die. So they start to die gradually. So it's a slow process. So I was diagnosed at the age of 11. I'm 36 now. And at this stage in my life, I have no peripheral vision. I have no, and that includes top and bottom as well. I have no night vision. So I'm completely blind as a bat in the dark. And my central vision is damaged, but I only have 3% of it. So essentially, if you were to try and experience what I see, it would be like covering one eye and then using a straw and looking through the straw with the other eye. So that is what I see. And within a few years, even that will close and that'll go away. So it's a slow process.
Mm-hmm. And if I had to ask you a very personal question, how do you manage? Do you have people around you, a support system, a partner who take care of you when needed? Of course, you can be self-sufficient with a lot of training and practice, but tell me about a day in Karan's life.
So I try and be as independent as I can be. Obviously, there are limitations. I obviously can't drive. I have to use my cane whenever I leave the house. I need the cane to navigate because I can't tell if there's a step in front of me or if there's a human being in front of me or, you know. So even with the cane, though, like, things happen. Like, I'll still trip and fall. I'll still walk into things. Because you imagine that you're looking straight ahead and it's like just looking through a straw. The rest you can't see. So if you're walking, you can't tell if there's a kid in front of you. You can't tell if there's one of those yellow cleaning in progress hazard signs, you know. So I've done things like I walked into the wrong toilet. I walked into a women's toilet. And if I didn't have a cane, like, they would be like, what the hell's going on? Get out. They would report me. So little things like that happen, you know, which are quite embarrassing. I will walk into kids and kids will fall. And so I try and be as independent as I can be. I use a lot of Uber. My husband, David, he is extremely supportive. I could not have asked for a better partner because he goes above and beyond to make me feel as independent as I can be. Like, he will drive me where I need to go. You know, he will hold my hand in the dark. Things like that. Mm-hmm. So I cope quite well with it. So little adjustments have to be made. Like, because it's like seeing through a straw, I can't have a TV that's too big anymore.
Yes.
Because I miss everything that's happening on the sides. So I have, David has installed the brightest lights possible in the house. So, like, friends come over and they're like, oh my God, it's so bright. And I'm like, yeah, this is exactly what I need. I've also made lifestyle adjustments. Like, I will refuse to go to restaurants that are too dark. I forgot to mention earlier that part of my condition is I also have partial hearing loss. So I use the hearing aid when I'm in a group setting. So I just refuse to go to places that are too loud or too dark or too crowded. And my friends respect that and appreciate that. So we'll always meet at my house or their house, or we'll pick a restaurant that's well-lit and not too crowded. So, like I said, lifestyle adjustments. The biggest, I wouldn't even say adjustment, biggest loss for me has been my career, because I can't use computers anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you can use computers, like, they have software where it reads things out to you, but that's not what I mean. What I mean is I have a background in graphic design, filmmaking, marketing campaigns, all that stuff that I did, but I can't do that anymore. I can do it on my phone for now because the screen is very tiny, if that makes sense.
So Karan, you have, if I have to look at your life, besides the condition, you've achieved a lot in your young life. I know you had to transition from a marketing professional to becoming or doing what you're doing now, being a disability advocate. There were a lot of challenges, but is there any particular personal or a professional aspiration that you feel you couldn't fulfill because of this condition? Something that always hurts or lurks in the mind or heart?
Yeah. Yes, I always wanted to be a pilot. So I was really fascinated when it came to planes, and I was fortunate enough to travel international at a very young age. So, you know, at the age of 12, I went to Switzerland. My grandfather took me around Europe, and it was just something about planes that I loved. I couldn't believe that this machine can actually, like, take off from the ground and, like, take you to this destination so far away. I know it sounds silly, but as a kid, I was so fascinated. So I couldn't be a pilot. And every time I get on a plane, I'm like, oh, I wish I was flying this plane. I mean, I'm sure no one else would want me to fly that plane, but I used to play Flight Simulator as a consolation because that was a game back then where you could be a pilot, like a virtual pilot. So I used to do that. So that, yeah, that's definitely something that I wish I could have done.
And Karan, you're also a proud member of the LGBTQ community. Was it challenging to come out of the closet, given that you're from India? There are a lot of stigmas attached to, you know, being gay in that community, even now.
Absolutely. So it's funny you say that, because I'm actually speaking at Chill Out Festival, which is Australia's largest regional pride festival. It's in Daylesford. It's an hour out of Melbourne. And I'm attending as a disability advocate because there is so much judgment within the gay community, because there's such an emphasis on looking good, being fit, you know, what clothes you're wearing, and then you've got a guy with a cane who's blind, it's very demoralizing. And it's so funny because for me, coming out of the disability closet, as I call it, within the gay community was extremely hard because of the judgment that's there. So I remember going on dates, obviously when my eyes were a lot better, but I still couldn't see too well, I would pretend to be drunk on a date because even if it was a coffee date in the morning, because if I don't take my cane, I'm walking into chairs and tables and I'm missing the coffee cup if it's right in front of me. And I would almost back then think it was cooler to say, oh, I'm drunk from the night before, than to be honest and say, I actually have a condition that's causing blindness and I need to use a cane that I haven't brought. So that is one of the main things I'm trying to change within the gay community, is more acceptance where people with disabilities are concerned.
And what are your plans for the future?
For the future, it's an open book. I'm really trying to explore this. So you've got to remember, I've only started doing this advocacy stuff since May last year. So it's not a very long time. I am an open book at the moment. So I am a little confused where my career is concerned, because I've had to give up my marketing career. I was fortunate enough to find another path where I am also a post-suicide support officer. So what that means is, when someone loses someone to suicide, you know, the family and friends, they don't necessarily want to talk to a psychologist or a counselor at that time. They just need someone to talk to that's a little bit more relaxed and no judgment and no, you know, how does that make you feel attitude, none of that. So that's what I do as well. It's a standby job. So I am still trying to figure out what I want to do. I think eventually I would love to do what I'm doing on a full-time basis. I want to give people the strength that I have now that I didn't have when I needed it.
Thank you, Karan, for speaking with us, for taking out time and telling us about your journey so far. We wish you all the best for your future endeavors.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
You're with SBS Radio.